Oh, maybe we should do a cold start and we just talk about Dirty right. Grandpa. Okay.
What was your question before?
Who do you think the movie executives were targeting with the movie Dirty Grandpa?
Dirty grandpas.
The second time around, it's so organic. Actually, there's so many ads in Williamsburg because we walk
for
around.
For Dirty Grandpa?
Well, there's...
Is that a new movie? Isn't that like...
No, it's an old movie.
Robert
I just saw it on the screen on your brand new TV.
Wish.
It'll be old news by Our the time listeners. Anybody listens to this. Yeah. So, like, the ads for Airbnb that are in Williamsburg, like...
Yeah.
Alyssa was saying, like...
Who are those for?
Yeah, who are those for? Everybody
They're
knows
for
about
people that live in the city that want to go travel to Airbnbs because they want to get out of this city.
Yeah, but like, is it that people aren't thinking about Airbnb enough? So Airbnb's like, we got to spend money and get a cool billboard.
Everyone does advertise and spend money. What are they going to do? Not do it?
I guess. I just feel
gotta
like...
spend money and make money.
Is like, because the idea is just them putting it out there just makes me think, you know, I should go on a vacation.
Yeah.
Because I feel
it
like...
It introduces the thought to your head.
The kind of people that use Airbnb once, you're probably going to use it for almost every trip, is my mm-hmm. guess. Like, I don't think there's... It's either you did
but what
it
if
and
it's
you
like
don't
a
like it.
Thought worm, you know, like, it gets, like, you don't think of it when you're, like, looking at it, but then, like, you know, it's sensory. Like,
yeah.
Later on, you see, like, your friend posting an Instagram photo of, like, a nice little house out in the country. You're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And like that same image just,
yeah,
it gets you because that's what they do. They trick you.
Cause I feel like Airbnb isn't advertising Airbnb. It's advertising, hipsters to take vacations.
Correct.
Because if a hipster takes a vacation, they're going to use Airbnb.
Right.
But the only obstacle for Airbnb is you forget to take a vacation. So they need to remind you.
Yeah. Good point. Anyways, welcome. Welcome to Paragraph Despair. I'm Chris.
I'm Anton.
We got a few things to talk about. Let's just dive right into
All right.
what's new.
All right.
While we're on hiatus, we're taking a quick year and a half long break.
Now, this is going to be like a week after the last episode that we just did.
It has been a week since I've seen you last.
Yeah. Okay, so the hiatus is those 7 days.
No, the hiatus is the... Oh, yeah, good point. The hiatus is the time before our just last week's episode.
Can we officially call it the hiatus?
Yeah.
Like it was
That's
a thing?
That's a thing, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So during our
the hiatus.
The hiatus. You know, there's a big... There's so much news about this topic. It's still in the news. Everyone's talking about it.
COVID?
No. Oh. That's over with.
Nobody cares about that anymore.
No one cares about all the people that died. No, this is about artificial intelligence.
Oh.
Hot topic. Everyone's talking about it. You gotta learn these AI tools. I don't know what it is, really. All I know is... I can potentially use it to remove some of the background noise in this podcast.
Yeah. You mean my dialogue?
Yeah. I got this AI app that removes your audio and it puts a more interesting person.
Oh, man.
And then I listen to that and then I go, you know what? Even me. And then
we replace everything.
It's just two AI bots chatting.
That'd be funny. Yeah, just there's an app where you upload your podcast and it just spits out a way better, different podcast.
Yeah,
and it's just an episode of This American Life.
You know, I guess Chat GPT being very big last 6 months, certain things.
Yeah,
but like what everyone always talks about is like why is it replacing all the fun work? Like, is that what we need AI to do? Replace all the creative, fun stuff?
Well, here's the thing. I think that it was never the intent to start with that.
Hmm.
So back when I was in college, I took an AI course, and this would be early 2000s, 2003, I think is, mm-hmm. no, wait, 2006 or seven is when I took this course.
Okay.
And they were talking about neural nets. Neural nets aren't a new idea. They've been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
but it's basically like, hey, we don't really know how brains work, but we know that brains seem to be relatively homogenous. They're made up yeah. of just the same cell over and over again. And it seems like they talk to...
In that we can somehow replicate this with computers.
Yes.
And try to...
So if we try this model of just the mm-hmm. like little nodes talking to other nodes that like create this network.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get something out of it. So they just start playing with this and they make bigger and bigger and bigger networks and they, mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. As you're sitting around doing this stuff and digging in on that, I think that's where the ideas come across of like, right. what if we trained down an image and saw what happened?
Right.
And then
much like you see an image and you learn and replicate and do things yourself. Like
yeah.
if you're a photographer, you see an image, you go, oh, I want to create something similar to that. But AI has the whole back catalog of inspiration.
Yeah.
And well, so
I guess the argument I'm making is I don't think that 20 years ago we set out to replace creativity.
Right.
Like some people were like Ray Kurzweil talked about how like, he wrote a program that would make jazz songs and stuff.
Okay.
But
that's why we don't listen to jazz anymore.
Exactly. Cause we have robots did it. Yeah. But I guess the argument I'm making is I feel like we meandered our way into this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was like, hey, the first thing we're going to do is replace art making, not artists, but like, this mm-hmm. I think it was just like one day a researcher woke up and it's like, huh, this model I'm using, what if I did this with it? And then, huh, that's weird that interesting thing happened.
Yeah.
But that's probably how any discovery happens, really.
Right.
Meandering.
Do you think that I mean, prior to AI just being very popular and talked about and people concerned about it over the past year,
mm-hmm.
How do you think it kind of interacts with like the previous big tech concern, which was big data? I feel like the problems go hand in hand.
Yeah,
because
they do.
AI is being kind of, you know, moved forward with the data that they're collecting.
Yeah.
Where do you think that runs into like the issues of, okay, so if AI is creating certain things based off of data it's harvesting from users, where does that kind of come in terms of, okay, what's it really creating that's new? What's it really kind of modifying? I mean, you made a point when we talked about this last time that, oh, you know, people take inspiration from things that already exist. So why can't computers?
Oh my God. This is an argument that I think is really everybody's missing. Like people, we have ChatGPT, which is incredible. It's
yeah.
incredible how organic the conversation you can have with this thing.
Yeah.
And then immediately the naysayers are like, it's not always right. And I'm like, you're not always right. People make mistakes all the time. They lie about stuff. They don't even yeah. realize that they confidently talk about it. And like, it's almost like a parent with their kid, and the kid comes in like, look at my art, and they're like, this is shit compared to a famous artist. And mm-hmm. it's just like, hey, actually this is like really crazy stuff that we're doing. And the same argument for the art stuff, they're like, oh, it's just regurgitating what it saw already. That's what every artist is doing.
That's true.
When you go to a Wikipedia page for any artist, musician, whatever, one of the mm-hmm. top sections is influences. Like it's
yeah.
just a thing that we talk about with
right.
art is like, what was your inputs that yeah. resulted in this output?
Right. Exactly. Okay. That's all I have on that.
I mean, what's your take on this? Where's it going?
I don't know. I read one interesting fact I want to highlight because I did actually was reading about this the other day. So I had to find the art. So I did do just the smallest amount of prep for this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anyone out there thinking I'm researching.
No, you don't want to be held to this one thing?
Because everything I'm hearing is kind of like, oh, the displacements of jobs and the kind of the utilization, even with the writer's strike going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to hear how writers are fearing that, because like the biggest thing that people take away from that is like, oh, they're going to use AI to just generate scripts. And then I'm like, no, that's not how studios are going to use AI to, like, people are still going to write scripts, but there's jobs in writers' rooms that are like story generation, idea generation, story outlining, certain kind of almost clerical work to writing that kind of gets pulled up. That's really important and that's helpful for kind of young writers in writers' room. But if you could, if Netflix has to decide between hiring a staff of 8 writers or, you know, 4 writers using AI to kind of do a lot of that work, you know, that's the kind of the fear that the writers kind of are feeling. So, like, I think there's a lot of talk of, like, AI taking jobs, but it's also kind of over, like, I think people have the wrong idea of, like, kind of how they're going to take jobs. But what I did read was that AI would boost the economy by $15.7 trillion by 2030. But at the purpose of capitalizing on data. So it's not like it's actually kind of providing.
Yeah, that's a big win.
That's a scarier fact, because the people capitalizing on data are the same 5 companies that's harvesting it. So, like, who are we really, who is it really helping?
Well, do you hear that? I don't know how true this is, because I didn't, like, look into it, but there was an article a little while back about a leaked memo at Google, and it feels, like, odd. Like, did this really leak? Is this a real memo?
Yeah.
But basically, Google was saying, we don't have a moat here with AI. It's going to be very quickly open sourced, all the things that's going on with AI right now.
Oh, okay.
And that means that we're not going to have a leg up. It's just immediately going to go to the masses.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because it wasn't my first thought, but like when ChatGPT kind of came out and like you're starting to see more thing, you know, AI powered software, I was kind of wondering where the bigger tech companies were in this, like even Apple, you know, Google, obviously, Meta, but
I have a theory on extent, this.
But I'm like, how come really none of them? I mean, Google kind of had a release of something that kind of went crappy, like, but like no one was really like. A lot of that discussion was from kind of more smaller upstart companies, and like a lot of the online tools you're kind of finding are from those.
Well, I have some theories on this. One is Google really kind of paved the way. They got a lot of the AI researchers. The paper Attention Is All You Need, which is like the big paper that everybody talks about as like the big leap forward in LLMs, which is the popular model that's like driving a lot of the discussions now.
Yeah.
I think that what the issue at Google was, is they weren't coming up with a application that they could use this. I think they were just focused solely on the research and weren't productizing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have a Google Home here. I have a Google Home. Those suck now. They're terrible. Like the tech, ChatGPT is so much better in terms of understanding what I want to do.
Right.
Instead of playing Pink Floyd every night when I'm asking it to play Pink Noise. Mm-hmm. These things are just bad.
Yeah.
Whereas OpenAI, they got the researchers and all of that. But I really feel like the selling point for them was they said, let's launch early and often. Let's put crap out there that we don't even really know what people are going to use it for. This is just my theory.
Right.
And when they did that, they made all these big companies realize, oh shoot, why haven't we been productizing this stuff? Let's scramble to productize. That's why Google was able to so quickly turn something around, is because
they had stuff.
Yeah, but they didn't think of it. Maybe they didn't think, oh, I should make a chat agent, or they weren't really
right
putting their product hat on and thinking how to leverage the stuff that they had in their offices.
Because like something like Chat GPT within just the Google search engine, that makes more sense to me than really anything else. Because I'm like, oh, that's how Google should just work, really.
Yep.
To this point.
But it's also ChatGPT I pay for.
Yeah.
Do you pay for it?
No.
Okay.
I signed up for
because I want to use the version 4, because version 4 is like really good.
Right.
And it's $20 a month. And Google's model is ads.
Right.
So Google starts putting AI and skipping you clicking ads and seeing ads, then like what is its business model?
Right. Do you think they'll ever kind of backfire on most of the big tech companies that really kind of, I mean, Google, Facebook, that's basically how they make money, ads.
Yeah, I feel it's interesting when you're a business and you get really entrenched in one way of making money.
Yeah.
It happened to Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
And then something disruptive comes along, and if you're not attuned to it,
you're done.
Yeah.
That's how business works.
Like, I think these businesses innovated, but they didn't innovate on their cash cows.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't. They're always still making money from their bread and butter. Google, it's still ads.
Right. Still YouTube ads.
Google, I mean, honestly, really died off. How are they even
making money?
Well, like, yeah, I remember when Google was like the most exciting company, and now it just seems like
they don't do anything cool. They just kind of settled into how people use their products.
Yeah. And to be honest, I feel like it's when Larry and Sergey moved out of Google. It just, it doesn't really do anything. There's nothing interesting going on that I'm aware of that they're launching.
Yeah. Ugh, we gotta stop talking about it. It's boring me. That's how much boring. Pretty good at these segues.
Yeah. All right, I'm bored. Next topic.
No, this actually leads into our next topic, and I hope you want to talk about it, because otherwise I don't have a middle topic to talk about.
Oh.
You've been making a video game.
Oh, yeah.
That utilizes ChatGPT.
Yes.
Is there anything you want to talk about it? Feel free not to. If you're still in development, don't want to talk about it.
Sure. So I'm making this video game because my history with ChatGPT is a couple months ago, there was like this press release like, oh, ChatGPT 3 is out and it's actually pretty good. You should try it. So I went on there and like I couldn't sleep one night. So I just started talking to ChatGPT and I was like, how do you work? Are you real? Like, are you sentient? Do you know what's going on? Just like asking it questions like, can you describe to me how you function? And it couldn't. It was because it's only trained on data in the past. So it doesn't even have access to the data about how it works, which is interesting. And I was impressed with how good the responses were. But I think when I used it, it was at an early phase where they hadn't set up the history on it. So like it can keep track of what you're talking about. Then it added that really quickly. And I was like, how did they all of a sudden just add this ability for it to remember what was going on?
Right.
And later I figured that out as I was working on this game, how it's all an illusion, what it's doing. Then I had it writing songs and stuff. And there was that period where it made that kneecaps and bottle caps. I said, write a song about how people are always confusing kneecaps and bottle caps. Mm-hmm. It wrote the funniest song. And sometimes when I'm having a bad day, I'll still pull that song up. It'll make me crack up. It's really funny.
You've generated a lot of good AI lyrics.
Yeah. Well,
including our hit song, Spiders.
Well, that's a funny
mouth
one.
Spiders.
We should release that on the site.
I'll play it at the end of this episode.
Hey, yeah, do that. That's awesome. Okay. So, long story short, I got playing with the chat, and it rekindled this idea that I've had for a long time, ever since I was a kid, which is like, I play these old adventure games growing up, and in the adventure games, it's very, like, there's a very specific way for you to play these games, and they present themselves as being open-ended, where, like, right, there's a mystery to solve, or, like, there's a thing to explore, but at the end of the day,
but
it's
there's
just...
there's still restraints.
Yes.
There's four options, because that's what matches your game dial. Like,
yeah.
So you can choose to an extent, but still, it obviously involves some sort of mapping out to have limited possibilities.
Yeah, effectively, all games up until very recently are the choose-your-own-adventure style. Like, you know, in books, you have to flip to a page. All the content's already pre-made, and they just are trying to send you down paths. There's, like... Remember when we were growing up, there were people would always talk about, like, did you do all the endings in the game? Because they would make multiple endings. And that was, like, the crazy thing is, like, there's not just one way to finish this game. There's actually eight.
Right.
And that was, like, a huge thing for you to, like, try all of them. The inspiration for this game came to me a lot longer ago, which is, like, I want to just have an organic conversation in a game when you're... Mm-hmm. It's not a new thing. A lot of people have talked about this, but when I was talking to ChatGPT, it was clear, hey, the technology is available now. So I took that and I kind of glommed it onto an existing architecture I had for an 8-bit style game for a game I made, like, 3 years ago called Conga Quest, where your goal is to get people to follow you in a line. And it worked really well. Yeah. And it's really fun to talk to.
Right.
So basically this game that I made is I'm working on an engine to make it so you can make games of this ilk, because you don't have to write a bunch of dialogue anymore.
So the end result really isn't so much about the game, but it's about the engine that you use. Is that really idea behind it?
It was, and I'm wondering... I'm still working on it, but I do wonder if, like, you need to know more about how stuff works under the hood to do a good game.
Yeah.
But we'll see. If I can make it so that anybody can make a good game, that's the win. I want, like, my nephews to be able to make a game with... characters that feel like they're there, but they don't have to write endless amounts of dialogue.
What excites you more about making a thing that helps people make things as opposed to just making a thing people can just use and utilize?
Yeah, it's a good question. I really like creating stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like other people do too. And I think that what holds people back from creating things... I bet a lot of people are going to, like, disagree with this, because I kind of disagree with it a little, too. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to lower the barrier for entry. And sometimes the barrier is where the ideas come from.
Right.
Like, the struggle and the process is where you come up with ideas. But at the same time, like, I just want to get in there and make a game.
The idea, like, you can kind of motivate someone to be creative without that much work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's a noble task. What, I guess, like, compared to other games that you've made, how is this different in terms of just the making experience? Because you've made a few games before.
Yeah.
You've had, I guess, problems and good results for both. What have you noticed from this process that's kind of a lot different from that?
In previous games... It's really, like, every game that I made before, I have to do everything. Mm-hmm. So it's just, like, me coming up with an idea for something to happen and, like, drawing it all out.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, it's kind of like trying to hang on to a bucking bull.
Yeah.
Because the AI is...
Constantly changing?
It's changing. It's not cooperative. Like, you can't actually have a game where you just take the raw output of the AI, because it will go off the rails. It will start talking about stuff that's like not in the scene. It will try to do things that aren't there.
Those have been some of the biggest issues that I've noticed from what you showed me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's different about working on this game is figuring out all the different ways I can try to corral it the right amount. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to corral it so much that it's just like the same game that you've always played with very small variation in dialogue. You do want it to do the crazy stuff sometimes, but you don't want it to do crazy stuff that takes you out of the experience because it breaks the experience.
Right.
So that's been the tricky part.
Right. Is there a concern that you have going forward that if something happens in ChatGPT 4, this is going to ruin it?
I think when I got started, I was a little bit more worried about how the technology changes could hurt it. But now that I have this system, and it's my secret sauce for how this works, like I've learned a lot from like trying to corral this stuff. I feel like I'm paving the way for like how games are going to have to do this. Like I'm not going to be surprised.
How games will work with AI.
Yeah.
Not just games made with AI.
Yeah. I feel like
those are it's a very big difference.
How games will work with AI?
Yeah. As opposed to just games made with AI.
What's the difference in your phrasing mean?
Like, it will be interesting to see how games can utilize it in different ways as opposed to just people playing games made with AI.
Oh, like a game where you just, somebody typed in like, hey, make me a game, and the AI made a game?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think games that use AI are going to have, games that use AI for dialogue to do it well are almost certainly going to the developers are going to independently discover the approaches that I've come up with. So I expect to see this, like, some of the stuff I'm doing now is it's going to happen.
Yeah. You've been taking the game to playtest night.
Yeah.
At our favorite playtest night bar.
Yeah.
What has been the biggest or the most common reaction to the game? And then what has been the most like interesting that maybe not too many people?
The most common react, I look at the people's faces as they're playing.
Right, and you see the sadness in their eyes.
Yeah, I see the desperation and how they
of wanting to get out of here and go to the bathroom.
them trying to make me feel good.
Yeah,
and they can tell how much this means to me. So
right, they see how excited you are, and they just like, oh man, I don't want to make them feel bad.
No, I see their faces and I see. I don't tell anybody when they walk up to this what this is. They walk up to a game. It looks like it's an old game from, like, the Nintendo, like, Super Nintendo, like, 90s age. So like, 16-bit, top-down, two-dimensional graphics. And you walk around the same way, arrow keys, and you talk to things. But as soon as you go to talk to somebody, a text box pops up. Mm-hmm. So that's new to people, and I'm like, it's fun to see them, like, they just go right into it. They just start typing. Mm-hmm. Normally, when you talk to a character in a game, it shows you dialogue first.
Yeah.
They start typing and then I see the gears turning as they slowly realize like, oh, I'm chatting with this thing. They have a lot of fun with it. Now, some people didn't have good experiences, but a good number of people had really great experiences talking to the characters. They get really into role playing and pretending to be the character that they are in this environment. So the biggest feedback I get is people like that one experience.
Yeah.
What I'm curious about is, does this scale? Would you want to do this again? Is it just the novelty of the first time? Yeah.
Is it something you can expand on? Is there more to it than the gimmick of just having something talk back to you?
Yeah. How do you change it from a gimmick to like, this is actually a core mechanic?
Yeah.
That's the big question for me is, can this happen?
Right. And the way that we're utilizing it is in the scenario of trying to solve a crime.
Yes.
An art heist.
Yep.
which when I tried recently, one of my favorite things was I tried to do it really aggressively by like telling people I was going to send them to jail and frame them for the crime to see if they would, break or crack. And then they didn't. But then this other guy there played it and said he was going to like just kill them.
Yeah.
And then it worked.
He went up to each person. Oh, he said I'm gonna kill you.
I think he was gonna like
yeah. Oh yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah.
Which I'm like, huh? Cause like, I mean, I guess they're both bad, but like, I don't know. I feel like, it was a good effort by my part.
Yeah, but it's cool that you have. There's different play experiences,
right?
Each person actually has had a pretty distinct experience I've seen.
Yeah. There's been a lot of interesting reactions and attempts. And
my favorite reaction was somebody said, this is a cool game. You should have you thought about using AI for it? And I was like, what are you like? I didn't even understand. I was like, what do you mean?
So they thought it was so well scripted that it was guessing all of the.
Yes. Wow. He thought I wrote, and he went up to each person and said, who committed the murder? And they all said there was no murder. So he thought I had anticipated that people would go up and say who committed the murder each time.
Yeah.
That was the reality that he thought I would spend all the time doing that instead of using AI. It was interesting.
Huh. You should use AI though.
Yeah, I should.
All right, more to come on that in future months, weeks.
Yeah, hopefully I'll release it online so people can try it.
Yeah, it's coming along. It's really fun. All right, last segment. It's been a while since, one big thing from last year that I've been doing is my Letterboxd tracking of all the movies I've been watching.
Oh, yeah. So you have it on your resume.
Yeah, I actually... So, like, I'll walk up to people and I'll start talking to them about my letterbox and they'll say, can you please leave me alone? I don't know you. I have my headphones in. I'm just trying to go to work. And I'm really excited to talk to them. And I think we've done this on the... was it the episode we didn't release?
Probably.
But anyways, I thought it'd be a good way to... lightly talk about the movies I've been watching, but also make a little game out of it. So I'm going to give you some movies that I've been watching.
Okay.
Then you're going to tell me what you think I rated them.
Ooh.
Because there are some ones that we've talked about before.
Is that a 5-star rating system?
Yes.
Okay.
So first movie I rewatched lately. It's the first time rewatching in the Letterboxd era. So like I started... Mm-hmm. tracking all the movies I'm watching in Letterboxd last January. So it's been a year and a half.
Okay.
So some of these movies I've seen before, but it's the first time I've seen them in the last year and a half where I can rate them now.
Oh.
So, for example, this next movie we watched for a very old episode of the podcast, but then I rewatched it and I tracked it in Letterboxd. The movie is Frank.
That's crazy. I was just thinking about Frank earlier in this episode.
Oh, why?
I read recently, and I really wanted to tell you, and I forgot to tell you, that Frank was based on an actual story about...
like a British guy.
Yeah, but it was named Frank, the character, too.
Yeah, it's like the same looking head, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they went in a different direction.
Yeah. I know, I like what the movie ended up being.
Yeah.
If they tried to do it too close to reality, I don't think it would have been as fun. Because I was thinking about it more, obviously it's after watching it. I think a big discussion I remember from the podcast that we left off on was it's definitely a movie about, some people just get it. And some people just don't get it.
Some people don't, yeah.
And that resonated with me more watching this. To see Domhnall Gleeson is the lead character... And he comes to the realization that he just doesn't get what the band's all about.
Yeah.
He tried to capitalize on it. He tried to use it for his own, self-exploration of music.
Yep.
But he just didn't get it.
Nope.
And then he had to release Frank back into the wild.
Yeah.
Because he tried to claim him.
And he was a virus that plagued that band and destroyed it.
Right. And then he had to release him back to the band at the end of the movie. Great movie.
Yeah.
Well, that might give you a clue as to why I rated it. So what do you think that I gave Frank?
Well, what I'm going to use as a lens for this is you traditionally rate movies lower than I do. What's your average? Like 3?
It depends. Oh, yeah, we did go through the stats once of like my most common ratings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was actually the biggest thing from that is there's a really good equal spread across the board.
For you.
I think there were a lot of 2.5 to 3.5 star movies.
Uh-huh.
And less, you know, higher than that and less lower than that. But like if you're, you know, thinking about the average movie, it makes sense. You know, like,
so is your star rating kind of like a bell curve where most of the movies are on 3? So.
Yeah.
Okay. That's very impressive for one.
Yeah.
That you are that objective that like you can rate things like that. I can
be very critical.
Critical, but like, I feel like you're accurate about it. Like, I think I'm always like very moody, and depending on how I feel, I'll skew it.
Yeah.
Okay. With that in mind, a person like me would go and see Frank and be like, I like that. 5 stars. But you, I'm going to say 4.
You nailed it. It's exactly 4 stars.
Nice.
4 stars is a great review in my book.
Right, for you.
Because I want to, like, there's so many movies, like, I'm not handing out 4.5, 5-star reviews to every movie I see, because wouldn't that just diminish the point of the system?
It would, and this is why I think you're a really good critic, and people should subscribe to your Letterbox.
I don't think anyone does.
They should, because I feel like I don't put a lot of thought into movies.
I just rate them, I don't.
But that says a lot.
Yeah. I'm good at handing out arbitrary numbers to movies.
Yes. But you make them less arbitrary.
Thanks. All right. The next movie we saw together in the theaters because I won tickets.
Ugh.
Chile 76. This was a movie. Oh my God, I'm already forgetting what the movie was about.
Yeah, I barely remember this movie.
This woman kind of hides a political refugee during the Chilean. It's kind of like a few years after the fascist regime kind of took over in Chile.
What year was it?
76. But I think the movie is like a little after, though, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Is 76 the year of the revolution or something?
Or I think it happened in 74 and then the movie takes place in 76 or something. But it was interesting because a month before this, I saw a movie called Argentina in 1985, which I think...
That's all they do in South America.
So confused because I'm like, so is it just you list the country and then the year and that's your true crime or, you know, your true to life movie about the fascist regime in that South American country? Like...
Chile only has like 100 movies each for each year.
I really liked Argentina 1985. That was about the prosecutors trying the military arm of the dictatorship after the dictatorship fell.
Mm-hmm.
And like the kind of the troubles to go to kind of prove what happened.
Okay.
I think there's a little bit more conflict in that. They're very different movies. But apparently, I think they name it that because I think it is something else in their native country. And then, like, the American, it just didn't make sense, so they just named it the country. So I'm wondering if that's the same. I could actually tell you the day we saw it. We saw this May 6th.
Okay.
So about a month ago.
Feels a long time ago.
I mean, a little over a month ago. About a week over a month ago.
And this review is based on when we watched it together, you saw it again.
When we saw it together.
Okay, so this is the fresh review you had coming out of the theater. Where we got to talk to the director, too, so that might...
Yeah, she was there.
I think that would skew a normal person, but not you.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd be like, I don't care if I'm telling it to their face what I think of this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's what's in my head. Somewhere between 2.5 and 3, and I can't, it's one or the other. Part of me thinks 3 would be like a, you being like, hey, we saw the director and that movie was somewhat interesting. But then, like, I feel like you're pretty true to your actual feelings. So I'm gonna say 2.5.
That's incorrect.
3.5. Yeah. Wow, you really gave it a good one.
I actually did like it. And I think, but you're right, though. I think if I would have watched this at home, I don't know if I would have given it that big of a rating. But the theater, the presence of theater, and then, the event of it, I think makes me enjoy it more.
Got it.
But also, I did really like the movie. I don't know. It was kind of a slow burn. It was a little slow at times, but like I sort of like that in terms of how it built to the suspense and the paranoia of it.
Yeah.
And I don't see many movies get made like that well and that deal with that kind of paranoia and like that sense, like, the issue being followed aspects and how it kind of built up and that you don't really know the full story. And then, I think there were some good reveals. I think it could have benefited from having maybe a more cathartic ending of sorts, of some sort of, something at the end that kind of tied things together more. But overall, I think in terms of kind of rating the movie and the theater experience, I gave it 3.5.
That's pretty high. I didn't hate it.
Now I'm second guessing the 3.5, but I'm not going to change it.
Okay.
But I was just looking at why I gave Argentina 1985. I gave that 4 stars.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty good. I did like that one. That's a Frank level movie.
That's a Frank level movie. Okay, next one. I'm a couple years late to the party, but I watched Bird Box.
Oh.
So. Earlier this year, when I was binge watching The Walking Dead for the first time, I was really into like crazy post-apocalyptic movies. I watched a lot of zombie movies.
Yeah.
Civilization Collapse, Here's What's Going On kind of movies.
Yeah.
I decided to watch Bird Box.
This movie, there's a bright light that doesn't like birds. Is that the premise?
You don't want to look at this evil force because then it just makes you want to kill yourself.
Or kill other people sometimes.
Kill other people, yeah.
Or no, sometimes get, it, it you're makes like you a little wanna
freaky
get...
and you want to make people look at it.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
It depends. The rules were kind of up in the air.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling about this real quick. I think that this movie was only popular because the novelty of Netflix at the time. And now Netflix novelty is gone, so I don't feel like it's... I don't think it would succeed in the same way if it came out today.
Yeah, you're right.
So, what's my guess? Is there anything else you wanted to say about it?
Nope. I do like John Malkovich's performance in it, but that's just because I like watching John Malkovich scream at people.
Oh, because there was a lot of flashbacks to them being in that house. Mm-hmm. I remember this vaguely.
Guess first and then I'll talk about it because I don't want to.
I feel like now I'm getting a better feel for you and I'm probably going to be wrong. 3.
No. Mm-hmm. This was a funny one. It was a 2.5 that I downgraded to a 2 slightly after.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I could see for you who watches probably a lot of movies of this pattern. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, this is another one of these.
It felt very studio workshopped, the overall experience. And it felt like, in terms of the structure and how they made it work, I was like, all right, they know what they're doing, but it still feels very...
I hate that.
Soulless in a way.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of video games these days, the AAA games are that heartless, but the graphics and sound is amazing.
It's like they know how to write and make a movie, but like it didn't leave me with anything new or feeling any sort of genuine reaction to it. I don't know.
And that's the thing. Like, if you're worried about losing your job, it's those movies the AI is going to make.
Yeah.
At least the first round.
Sometimes I almost would rather you make a, like a pulpy, crappy movie than a just okay movie.
Yeah, maybe just don't make a movie. There's plenty of movies.
Yeah, we have
none. Stop with the cash grabs.
Yeah, just stop.
We no more side hustle bullshit.
Yeah. All right. We got our fourth one. We saw this movie together with our significant others in theaters. You probably know what it is. Showing Up.
Oh.
Kelly Reichardt film. I mean, you kind of... spoiler, you know me, and I dragged everyone to this movie that I'm a big Kelly Reichardt fan. This is a movie about
only
Michelle. Oh yeah. I'm an accidental Kelly Reichardt stalker because I would always go to want to see her movies opening weekend. And then whenever I'd look in, like, the Showtimes, I'd see the ones that say, oh, this one has a Q&A with Kelly Reichardt. Might as well go to that one. And then I'm like, oh, this is, like, the third time I did this. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
So
today.
Yeah. Anyways, this is a movie about Michelle Williams.
Oh, is it about her?
Well, it's not about her. It's about her character. She likes to sculpt things, and it's... kind of like a meditative day in the... Well, not day in the life. I think it's over a couple days.
Yeah.
Her trying to put together a show while she works and deals with her apartment and also a bird that flies into her apartment.
It's the sequel to Bird Box.
Yes. The bird escaped the box, flew into Michelle Williams' apartment, gets attacked by a cat, and then they have to heal it back to life.
Yeah.
And then it just got rid of all that other shit that didn't make sense. So with that in mind, what do you think I rated?
What did you rate it?
It's one of my surprises.
As a big fan of this person, and you just gave a hint that it might surprise me. So this is a movie that I thought was really solid. Like, thinking back, there's so many scenes that come to mind. It's like vivid scenes. The characters were cool in that you learned a lot about them without them even talking. Like, they did a really good job of presenting these people and who they were and how they inhabited this world without a ton of dialogue.
Yeah.
I would have given this a 3.5 just because it's like, as a note to myself, if I'm looking to watch something again, I wouldn't watch that again, but I thought it was good. I'm going to say you gave it a 3.5.
Yep. That's exactly it. That's the second one you got. Right on the nose.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not her. It's not my favorite Kelly Reichardt movie, but like, I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. And like,
it sticks with you.
Yeah, and I think for anyone that likes to do anything creative while also needing to pay rent, I think it's
she
just,
painted that picture perfectly.
Yeah, like, it's the more real, like, if you do a movie and that's a portrait of an artist, it's 9 out of 10 times in a movie setting, it's about a very successful artist that kind of has issues. And if you think of, like, most artists, they're kind of surviving okay.
Yeah.
They have issues. You know, her brother has issues, her relationship with her parents.
There's this is the most
obviously more
portrayal.
Realistic issues a person would have that's not, you know, Jackson Pollock getting hammered and getting into an accident driving a car, or like, you know, being like jilted by a lover or something. It's not phony in that aspect.
There wasn't even any lovers in that whole movie.
Yeah.
What's that scale? Is it the Bechdel test?
Yeah, it's the idea that if when two women are together, they're going to talk about a man. And so if there's scenes like that.
That's why they had the brother character, so they could make sure that people they talk, would be interested. But it's not in
a romantic part. Yeah. No, yeah, I just really liked, and I always just, any of her movies, there's just a, there's a nice patience to watching it that I just really enjoy. I just like looking at the frame. I just like watching it set there, and
it's a really good movie the more I think about it.
Yeah, they stick with you. I think all her movies are very good in that regards.
I think maybe I would have liked it more if I didn't feel like I've been living this life in a lot of ways. Not even with Alyssa, but like...
Didn't you lean... Because, well, Alyssa does ceramics.
Yeah.
And art. So you leaned over to Alyssa and immediately after the movie and you said, do you feel attacked?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it took place outside of a city. I feel like city art is a totally different vibe than that, like, suburban art.
I don't know. I think the art scene in a lot of places is different where you go, but like, I think if we're talking about quality of work, I don't think we're seeing that much of a difference.
Oh, I'm not talking about the work. I'm talking about the lifestyle.
Oh yeah, the lifestyle, definitely. But still, there's working artists here that you have to have a job.
Yeah, but I feel like the scene for artists here is a lot more optimistic feeling. And there's a lot more energy to it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like...
I thought they did a good job, though, of painting a community around that there's other artists involved that like to do things.
Yeah. So, there was a girl I dated a while in the past. Her sister was an artist in like, Vermont or something. And that... It felt like that scene. Like, the Vermont specific art scene. Yeah, yeah. Like, suburban.
Everyone knows each other.
Yeah.
Here, there's so many people doing stuff that you might be surprised by.
And people aren't trying to be, like, artists on a world scale. They're trying to be artists on a community scale and how they're worried about how the people in the community look at them.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's this last one is a trick. It's three movies. Because I wanted to watch them before...
It's not the Fast and the Furious movies, is it?
No. I wanted to watch them all before the fourth John Wick. So it's John Wick 1-3. But then I never got around to watching John Wick 4. I missed it while I was in theaters. So I just go wait. But I did watch John Wick 1-3.
Do you remember which thing was distinctly in which one?
If I think about it long enough.
They all blur together to me.
I have, you know, thoughts about them.
Not that that's many. Good.
You know, I mean, I didn't watch it and go, okay. Brain off.
I kind of like John Wick movies are slapstick. It's Three Stooges action movie.
I think to the point where I haven't heard Keanu Reeves talk much about it, but like kind of the impression that I get from them is that it's a collaboration with, you know, a lot of the people that kind of worked on The Matrix and, like, the action in terms of, like, coordinating the fights.
Yeah.
And that they really wanted to make a movie that kind of celebrated and worked with really well-crafted action sequences.
Yeah.
And I think for that, the movies nail it. Like, they're some of the best... Like, if you're... For what it's trying to do, nails it.
Yep.
You know, I'm not going to go into like, oh, well, you know, the story and like how it works, certain aspects could definitely be better. But like, for what the movie's designed to do, it does an amazing. And like, in terms of an action movie, like I get sucked into those fight scenes. They're just very well coordinated. And it's like, you know, watching like the world's best dancer, like they're just nailing it. And like, there's these long takes and they do a really good job of them and they're suspenseful and there's variety to them and there's surprises to them. I mean, and that's hard to do considering each movie will relentlessly just have Keanu Reeves kicking ass for just the whole time.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where you like, he's not going to lose because it's Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
But like, I know that, and I'm still invested in it. And I think that's harder to do than you might think, because there is a way to make that movie and you think, oh, this is boring because I know he's just like, because there's like old Steven Seagal movies or Chuck Norris movies used to do that. That was in Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like all those movies, like 90s action movies that were just basically either straight to video or slightly above it, depending on like the era of where those action stars' careers were in. But the reason why a lot of those suffered is because they were very complacent in their action stars, and that you just knew they're going to do what they're going to do to win, and they won, and it wasn't really exciting.
Yeah.
I think this does that better in having Keanu Reeves. Is just, yeah, it makes it a better movie.
It, to me, it feels like the old, the movies before audio, like talking, before talkies. It was all this kind of like visual spectacle stuff.
Right.
And that's what this is. It's right. Just,
it's just a
dance, like you said.
Pure action movie.
Yeah.
And like, I think action movies had suffered over the last kind of 10, 20 years. Cause I mean, there's action movies in the sense of like a Marvel movie or like a large scale, like action adventure movie that's like from a known entity and has action elements. But like, if we're talking like how we used to talk about action movies, just, you know, guys going in guns blazing, like some of that lower budget action movies have really suffered. And to this, I think there's kind of like, there was, especially in like the first one, there's kind of like an independent aspect to this. Cause like watching the first one, I'm like, wow, this is kind of like, they had a budget, but it still felt really low budget to me. It felt kind of corny. It felt kind of B movie-ish.
Yeah, it does.
There were some weird ways that it was shot, but like, you know, we're talking about a director that was mostly specializing in action and not really crafting a movie. And like, I was completely fine with letting that go and not thinking about that. But do you want to guess what I rated for each one?
Oh, for each individual?
Yeah, you got to guess all three at the same time.
All right. The first
Before
one.
Before I continue the conversation.
The first one, I think you gave 2.5, then a 3, then a 3.5.
With number one, you were right. It was a 2.5.
Okay.
With number two, if I can find it, you're wrong. I gave it a 2.5. And then with the third one, I gave it, I think I know what I gave it, but let me just, I gave it a 3.
Okay.
So you're a little right. This, like, and I do think they get, each movie got progressively better.
4 is good.
That's what I hear. I hear 4 is really good. I haven't seen it.
It's,
I want to see
4
it.
4 is like what I hoped all of them would have been.
Right.
And I probably would have been fine just having seen 4 and that was it.
As I watched them and then I heard about 4, I was kind of like, you know what? If the first movie never existed, this be a really good, it'd probably be a really good trilogy. Because number 3 felt like what the second movie should have been. But number 2 was a better execution of the same movie as movie number 1. So like, I thought number, I gave number 2 the same rating as I gave number 1 because I'm like, this is the same movie, like, pretty much. It was just better.
Yeah.
Like, executed. But, like, I didn't feel anything different from it. And there's still kind of, like, a, you know, a learning thing with the world in the first one that I didn't want to give it too much of a ratings bump. So I just gave it the same rating. And then the third one, I'm like, oh, this is fun. This is big. This is kind of wacky in some regards. It's different. I like it.
Is the third one with Halle Berry?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Jason Mantzoukas is the TikTok man.
I don't even remember him.
Yeah,
in that.
It's. I just think that. Yeah, the world that it's set in, I have to say, is like
the only thing I remember.
I thought
about,
it was kind of dumb at first, but I'm like, this is actually kind of funny. Like this world of assassins, and like it's like
it is super corny. Yeah. And like clearly, just like they're
in like the steampunk offices. You know, like I just think. Where they like, all right, there's a contract out on him now.
Oh, yeah.
And then they, like, you know, do the old admin thing.
You're
and,
right, yeah.
And like they have this money system that doesn't really make sense because like everything just costs one coin. I'm like, do you just spend the same amount for what you paid for the guns for like a drink at the bar? yeah, I don't know. It was fun.
Four, I think, was like really good.
Four is like, what, 3 hours long?
Yeah.
Man, too long.
It is a lot of, it takes a lot out of you to watch it, but the characters are pretty fun.
All right.
And they introduce a character in four that I hope carries like on in other John Wick movies.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And that wraps this episode. We went pretty long today.
Make sure that you play Spiders.
Oh, yeah. We're going to play the song that Anton used AI to generate the lyrics. And then I took those lyrics and I made a song out of it.
Made a pretty killer song.
It's called Mouth Spiders. It's all about the dangers of leaving your mouth open and letting spiders accidentally crawl in, I think.
Yep. And it plays right now. I was just minding my own when I saw a spider crawl. I screamed and ran. Hard way when I forgot, I opened up my mouth to say, oh my god, a spider, and then it went in. I quickly closed my mouth, let it out again. Number two, keep your mouth closed so the spiders don't. It's bugs and bees. You never know what might try to squeeze into your mouth when it's open wide. So remember to keep it closed. Don't let them inside. Remember to keep your.